we no longer introduce Elton Trueblood. I think we just thank God that he is a dream of dreams with us, and he shares the vision which is ours, and more than that, he helps to implement them. So he will share with us once again. I asked him what he was going to preach on. He gives me a different title every time I talk with him. And finally, he just simply says, in that hour it shall be given him what he shall say. Well, brother, he's going to say what he said 5 or 10 minutes ago when I was coming down tonight. I don't know, but I know that it always does us good when he speaks to us. Because somehow he, without being in physical touch with us, knows what we're thinking, what's happening in our corporate life, and so often is able to be one step beyond us, and he helps us to take that step, and we are grateful that he's with us. Okay.
My whole mood this morning is one of thanksgiving for this fellowship. I thank God that you are, and that you have maintained the kind of witness that you have been able to maintain. More than most of you know, you are having a national ministry. The place seems so small, so inconspicuous, and most of the people here would say that they do not have any remarkable gifts. Yet it is a fact that you, by God's grace, have been able to lift the sights of many, many people. And so we thank God that you make the witness that you make. As we develop in the spiritual life, certain very big changes come. I'm going to talk about one set of changes in this hour, and then I'm going to talk about another set of changes at the next hour of worship. I told Gordon that I wasn't going to make him and Mary, maybe they'd be the only ones who'd be in both sessions, listen to the same thing twice. But in any case, I have another reason, and that is that I think I have two things to say. I'm not quite sure what I'll say at 11, but I have some idea. But at this hour, I'd like to talk about what might be called the grammar of faith. Now, these changes that come, that many of you know in your own lives, are all symbolized by changes in grammar. Now, the first of these is a change in person. You know that the best loved of all of the chapters in the Old Testament is undoubtedly the 23rd Psalm. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. You may know it by heart, but have you ever noticed the crucial change in person? It begins with the third person. All of you know what we mean in grammar by person. The first person, the I, the me, the my. This is the person speaking. The second person, the thou, the thee, the thy in the singular, the you in the plural, and now we in English have debased it so that we only use just the plural for everything. The German and the French have kept the singular. And some of us, in Quaker parlance, have tried to keep some of the singular, though it's a losing battle. But because we read it in the Bible, we all know what it is. Thou is the singular of the second person, the person spoken to. He or she, these are the singular of the third person, the person spoken about. And they, and there, and them, the plural of the third person. Here then are the three great persons of all speech. The person speaking, the person spoken to, and the person spoken about. Now, the 23rd Psalm begins with the third person. The Lord, He is my shepherd. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. And this is great. It's wonderful that God is spoken of personally, not as an it, not as a thing, not as a mepar, but one who can know us and love us and who cares. And you might say, well, this is as far as you could go, but it isn't. Right in the middle of the psalm, there is this great and revolutionary change. For thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. This is a great change because then you move over to the I-thou relationship that Martin Buber, long professor of philosophy at the University of Jerusalem, has made clear to literate people all over the world. It is the closest relationship there is. If I talk about him, oh, that can be far away. But if I say, I love thee, thou lovest me, this is as close as you can ever get. It is the closest relationship in all experience. In all the world. It is immediate. It is direct. It is completely personal. It is the inevitable language of prayer. And do you notice how Jesus then, picking this up, in his best love of all of his prayers, the one that you find in Matthew 11, begins, I thank thee, O Father, Lord of heaven and earth, that thou didst hide these things from the wise and prudent, but reveal them unto babes. Not I thank it, not I thank him even, but I thank thee. In this kind of prayer, Christ is giving an entire theology. Lord of heaven and earth, the one who made the stars, and the natural law and all the order, but also one who loves you and loves me and cares and knows. He is a thou. And if all we had in the gospel was this single prayer of Christ's in the 11th chapter of Matthew, we could reconstruct almost the whole of the gospel. As in paleontology, we reconstruct an entire building from just a few stones. This, then, is the first great part of the grammar of faith. The movement from the third person to the second. Have you taken this step? The second great step in grammar is a movement in tense. There is a great danger in all of our religion to talk about the past. And in some ways, the past has been glorious. Have you heard people sing? When I hear that sweet story of old, how Jesus was here among men, I should like to have been with him then, as though that would have been better. We read about the great events of the heroes and the prophets and the saints and the apostles. And the whole tendency is to think that it was far away and long ago. And on the other hand, we tend to concentrate on the future. In the sweet by and by. The kingdom maybe will come. But the great mood of mature religion is neither to be found in the tense that is past, nor in the tense that is future, but in the glorious living present. By all odds, the most magnificent of all tenses is the continuing present. Not God was, not God will be, God is. And so the 23rd Psalm begins, "The Lord is my shepherd." Do you know a greater word than is? It is neither nostalgia nor hope. It is truly immediate. We find that when Christ started his ministry, the first sentence that we know from him in the gospel, in his public ministry, after the temptation, is to be found in Mark 1:14. Now after John was arrested, Jesus came into Galilee, preaching the gospel of God, and saying, "The time is fulfilled." This was the gospel. The gospel of the present. Nearly always when there has been a real revival of vital Christianity, this has been the case. In the great Quaker burst of life 300 years ago in Britain, when George Fox came down from Pendle Hill, a brand new man, At the end of May, 1652, he had just one great sentence to say. Christ has come to teach his people himself. And then later he said, Christ is come to teach his people. The only reason that we can see that Fox, unlettered as he was, so moved men was, that he was talking to them about a present possibility. Namely, that they could be just as close to Christ as were James and John and Peter and Andrew and all the others. That it isn't merely telling an old, old story. It's telling what is always a present story. Most of you have been very much moved, I think, by the account in Luke 4, of Christ coming back to his hometown, as though you, as his minister, would go back to your little town, whatever it might be. And, of course, what he would read there in the synagogue when he went there that day, this was very instructive. But you know what he read. He chose out of all the hundreds and hundreds of passages a passage from the 61st chapter of Isaiah. And he came to Nazareth where he had been brought up, and he went to the synagogue as his custom was on the Sabbath day. And he stood up to read. And he opened the book and found the place where it was written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me." Now, this moment, and after he finished, he said, not this is something that's going to be fulfilled. Today this scripture has been fulfilled in your ear. So far as I can see, this is one of the greatest reasons for the sense of excitement and urgency that filled the hearts of the people who followed him. It was religion in the present tense. These then are two very big changes. From the third person to the second, and from the past or the future to the present. The third great grammatical change is a change in number. In the beginning of religion, we tend to say I, me, and mine. We tend to make it singular. We are so concerned with our own problems. They are real. They are great. They are numerous. They are many. They are urgent. They are hard. When I look at the faces here, I realize that everybody here has a problem of his own. No doubt about that. I don't know what it is. In most cases, I don't. And so we can easily see why we begin this way. But then, as our religion becomes a movement in depth, it moves from the I and the me and the mine to the we, to the us, and the our. So in the marvelous prayer that we all said a while ago, Notice the very first word, our. Our Father. Jesus is taking us over from the inadequate faith that is individual and solitary to a faith in which we are so much members one of another that we are almost lost in one another. There is a little side of the gospel that refers to your aloneness. No doubt about that. There are times to be alone. Christ spent the whole night alone in prayer before he chose the 12, says Luke. And he did say that sometimes you ought to go alone into your closet. That's right. You ought to, and I ought to. But anybody who thinks that this is the full gospel hasn't even begun to understand it at all. The full gospel never comes till we say we and say our. And by this shall men know that you are his disciples, that you love one another. Now there may be other changes than these three. I don't know. But I do know that these three are real. These three are important. And if only we could make these three changes, the whole of our religious life would be revolutionized. I'll tell you the religion I want. It is the religion of the second person. It is the religion of the present tense. It is the religion of the plural number. Let us pray. O Lord, thou knowest how fumbling we are. Thou knowest how hard it is, put as we are in this troublous life, to show indeed that we are made in thy image. But, O God, we thank thee that sometimes a bolt is drawn back within the breast, so that even for a little while, what we would, we say, O God, make this one of those times.